Welcome back to the Move Podcast. I'm JB Hager, and I know I sound like a broken record saying this is the first time for the Move covering a different race, the Tour of Romandy. Luckily, I'm joined by two experts who watch every race on the planet constantly. We have Spencer Martin and Johan Bernil, and we're going to dig into the Tour of Romandy, which was good news for Americans, and we'll get into that in just a second. But first, let's check in with Lance with a couple of our partners who have some special offers for you.
And talk about being a fan of something. Let's talk about Manscaped. Let's go ahead and tell the world, right, that the leaders in below-the-waist grooming are traveling north of your South Pole with their revolutionary grooming products. The brand new Weed Whacker 2.0 and their new Beard line confirms they have all the best tools for your hygiene toolbox. Time for you to upgrade your game by going to manscaped.com. Using the code THEMOVE gets you 20% off. But gentlemen, while you're there, check out the Beard Hedger Pro Kit. This is one that we, you know, I can barely grow a beard, so you know George is all about this. A couple of other cool factoids: waterproof, cordless trimmer, rotary wheel, 20 hair cutting links, all with one guard. An amazing thing. Also, and big thanks to everybody at Manscaped for really pitching in for the fight against cancer, specifically the fight against testicular cancer. Good on you. Again, head on over to manscaped.com. Use the code THEMOVE. That gets you 20% off and free shipping. Manscaped.com. Today's show also brought to you by Ventum. This is our bike, our go-to bike of choice for not just myself, but George as well. We just got our new NS1s. We were just over in Europe and have been just riding constantly on the new NS1. Thing's a damn rocket ship. Of course, their gravel bike, the GS1, is also a gravel rocket ship. It's been amazing. There's so many bikes and so many options out there. I got to say, this one has really gotten my attention. And I finally converted the Diva, George, over to the Ventum. The brand is totally kicking ass. Dedicated customer support to help you out at every step of the purchasing process. They're also producing great content. They'll make you inspired to ride your bike. We all need that. Check out their socials on Instagram and YouTube. It's at Ventum Racing. Special offer. Get 10% off when you use the code WEDO at checkout over at ventumracing.com/themove. Again, that's ventumracing.com/themove. Checkout code is WEDO. Gets you 10% off.
All right, let's start with this. Spencer, why don't you just kind of go through the winners, and then we have some pretty cool details that we want to talk about, as I teased a moment ago. Good news for American cycling. We'll get into that in great depth coming up. But first, let's talk about the stage winners, the overall, and then we'll start to break it down.
Yeah, I mean, it's a six-stage race. It's confusing because there's a prologue and then stage 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. We were just discussing up top. Odd, because there's two time trials in a six-stage race, but I guess that's because it's in Switzerland and they love their time. But the prologue was won by Joseph Czerny of Sudal Quickstep. Stage one, that was the prologue. The time trial stage one, a sprint finish won by Ethan Vernon, a young British rider on Sudal Quickstep. So great start to the race for them. Ethan Hayter, the young British rider on Ineos, wins another sprint on stage two. And these were like reduced sprints after pretty hilly, hard days. Stage three, the time trial, the longer time trial won by Juan Ayuso of UAE. Really impressive performance. We'll dig into that. This was his first race back in 2023, back from injury after his third place at the Vuelta last year. I'm sure Johan's going to have a lot to say about that. Stage four, the big summit finish won by Adam Yates. Pretty impressive ride from him. And then we'll talk about Matteo Jorgensen holding on to second overall there, kind of securing second overall with that ride, which is impressive when you consider that he top 10 at Tour Flanders not that long ago, which is not a race that's super compatible with this. Stage five was another reduced sprint won by Fernando Gaviria on Movistar. Really impressive sprint finish from him. Looked kind of like the old Gaviria. So I'll be interested to get your guys' thoughts on that. So, and then Adam Yates secured the overall win due to a strong time trial on stage three, actually pretty impressively strong from him. And then that win on stage four on the summit finish. So Yates gets the overall and Gaviria gets the final stage.
Very good. Let's start out with the mishap at the prologue. and jump into that, because I don't know. I think I saw something that Johan either tweeted or posted. It's like some mechanic's getting fired today. And I was like, oh, what's this?
Yeah, I did. That was in our group chat.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah. I mean, people who have watched the race, we saw Rui Costa getting off the ramp. And something I've never seen. I've seen cranks coming off, but I've never seen a crank staying on and a chain ring coming off completely. So obviously, I mean, it was, you know, he was lucky he didn't hurt himself more, but though he did have to abandon the day after. Rui Costa, ex-winner of Tour of Romandy, racing in Switzerland, is probably his favorite country. He's won the Tour of Switzerland, Tour of Romandy, had good performances there. And so after that prologue, it was game over for him.
He's been riding really well.
Yeah, he's been riding really well.
Freakishly good at these Swiss stage races. I mean, he is almost a specialist in Swiss stage races. So it's got to be devastating for him to have this happen.
Yeah. I was talking with a few mechanics on other teams, not on that team. and I asked around a little bit, and they confirmed what I was thinking. You know, I can only think of one thing, is that this prologue, they obviously went to see it in the morning. They kind of made up their mind. And then during the race, they saw that certain riders were using certain gears. And, you know, maybe half an hour before the start, Costa has said, you know what, instead of a 55, I would like a 56. Or instead of a 54, I would want a 56 on the front. Mechanic did that. And, you know, officially they say they put on the wrong bolts, because we could see it was a carbon fiber chainring. And before it was probably a normal one. So I still think it wouldn't come off if the bolts are tight. I mean, the bolts were not tight. That's my only explanation. You know, there are probably bolts in there, but they were not tight. And I mean, things like that shouldn't happen. Of course, you know, we all make mistakes. Humans make mistakes. But that was really a big, big, big mistake of the mechanic, in my opinion.
Oof. And I did jot that down when you sent that message. My question to you is, from your experience, have you ever seen a mechanic just get fired over a single incident? It's probably building up, if you know, but no, it happens.
It does happen. You know, obviously the guy will have taken responsibility and apologized, and listen, mistakes can be made. You know, I don't think it's, I mean, my message in the group chat was a bit exaggerated, but I mean, those are serious mistakes, you know. Luckily, it was a time trial. You know, if you have something, I mean, then again, you know, if it's in a road race, you would feel it during the stage before the final sprint or something, because you know you have to think, okay, this comes off when the torque is maximum. So in a prologue, it won't be more maximum than when you're standing still and starting. Just, you know, a very unfortunate but spectacular incident, unfortunately for Rui Costa.
And Johan, on the prologue, Quickstep is running these goofy helmets. I'm sure you guys noticed this, where it looks like they have, they're a little chilly and they have like something around their neck. Mm-hmm. I hate these. I think they look terrible. They're stacking up a pretty impressive run of wins in these time trials with these helmets. Is there anything to this? Like, do you think these are actually making them faster?
It's a specialized helmet, right? So, yeah. It's Bora and Total Energies and Sudal Quickstep. I don't know, man. Doesn't make much sense to me, but listen, I mean, they've obviously done the research. The question is, you know, if it's that much faster, then why do other brands not follow that example? I mean, I can hardly believe that you can have a patent on a face sleeve or whatever you call it. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know.
I don't think they're going to sell many of these to the general public.
No. Oh man, no way.
There's one thing for sure, JB. When a rider shows up with a helmet like that, people talk about the helmet and the brand.
Right. And we've seen it with some obnoxious glasses too, right? It gets people talking.
Not a bad marketing idea. But the guys ride with it. I mean, they have the option to not wear it. And I see guys, especially the time trial specialists, they are wearing it. So they must believe in the science behind that, however you call that. How do you call it in English? Like a bank robber,
like a baklava, I guess. It does look like, yeah, they're about to go in and rob a bank. I'm surprised they haven't been stopped by police on course. That's how bizarre it looks. But you know, the prologue at the tour, or I guess that was a stage, the stage one at the tour, I thought beat a lot of really strong riders. Same thing here. I mean, was it Josef Czerny? Is that how you'd say his name?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, good rider, but he's beating Tobias Voss, Remy Cavagna, Ethan Hayter, Mateo Sobrero. Those are really good time trialists. So,
yeah. Well, Czerny is a time trial specialist too. You know, he said he was motivated, was in shape, was not surprised about his win, he said himself. Now, speaking of the prologue, and, you know, one of the, I mean, we Czerny won, we have the incident with Rui Costa. Was really tight at the top, but I cannot pass on the occasion of, you know, to talk about, and this is actually sad, starting to be really sad, is Chris Froome. Chris Froome finishes once again in the last 20 in a prologue, and then does really, really bad in the individual time trial. I think there was only 15 riders behind him in something that before he was one of the best in the world. You know, with all due respect, Chris Froome, you know, he's been an amazing champion. You know, he's won 7 Grand Tours, I think, 4 times the Tour de France, which is amazing. And now to see this contrast, I mean, I don't know what you guys think. Obviously, we all know that it really started to go south for Chris with the accident in the Dauphiné before the Tour de France. You know, he had, it was a terrible accident, terrible injuries. The recovery was long, and you know, the first year was hard to come back to. I mean, even to pedal the bike again. But now, you know, we're 3 years, 4 years down the road, and I think it's a sad sight to see such a big champion to be struggling like that. And I say, why don't you just stop racing, Chris? You know, it's like, okay, listen, I mean, we all know he has a huge contract, but man, it's not like he was riding for peanuts before either, I think, you know, when he won all these Grand Tours. And yes, now it's a huge contract, you know, good negotiation, but there must be some kind of, I mean, just, you know, make a deal with your employer, take half of the money and stop cycling. I'm pretty sure they would be glad to pay half of the money to get out of that contract, business from a business perspective, I think. It's a sad sight, you know, and
they're limited. You've pointed this out on a previous show that was new to me. The teams are limited on the number of riders they can have on their team per season. It's occupying a slot.
But I think the biggest problem there is it's occupying a huge chunk in the budget.
A big chunk of their budget.
You know, you can always get rid of a rider, you know, by kind of paying him and placing him in another team. That's not the issue there. I think it's a budget issue. And let me be clear, it's not the only rider, right? He's there. Who else is there who's like at the end of his career? Yeah, Fuglsang, also a huge contract, hasn't even raced yet this year even. You know, then I think they made, I don't know if Dylan Teuns, they paid him a big contract to come last year to kind of try to save the team. That didn't work out. There's some, I don't know who's at the head there of the scouting and transfer decision making, but doesn't, you know, I'm not impressed. I'm not impressed with the decisions they made on that part.
I would assume most contracts have performance clauses in them.
No, no.
That's not very common, huh?
No, no. But it's, at the end of the day, you also have to think one thing, right? So yes, it was probably, you know, almost double the money that he was making at Ineos. But Chris Froome still had a contract. And if they let him out of his contract, there's a reason. Otherwise, they would have fought to keep him.
Mm.
Right? So that should already be an alarm bell.
Hey,
listen, you know what, Chris, you've been amazing, but unfortunately, you're not going to be able to come back to your former level, you know, and they just let him go. It was a done deal straight away.
Do you think at the time, I'm trying to remember, when they signed Froome, was that to make Israel Premier Tech more legitimate?
Mm-hmm.
That was the goal, right? Like, yeah. Look, we're big, we're playing with everybody. Right.
Yeah, you know, I think I don't know the financial situation of Team Israel, but the owner or the financer of the team, Sylvan Adams, must have really, really deep pockets. But I would guess that, you know, no matter how much you like your little toy, which is your cycling team, you know what, if you spend so much money and there's nothing, literally nothing against that signing. I mean, this is now year three, I think. Is it year three for Froome
Yeah, 2020 was the first. 2020 was the first one. So this is the third year of a 5-year deal.
Oh wow. 2021 was the first one, I guess.
Oh. Huh. Maybe I'm losing my mind. Maybe he didn't race in 2020.
No, he didn't. He didn't race. No, he didn't race. Yeah.
Oh boy. So that's even worse than I thought.
He came back in the Vuelta with Ineos. He came back in the Vuelta with Ineos in 2020, which was really at the end of the year in the COVID year.
Okay.
Yeah, that's correct. But yeah, I mean, something is not going very well on that team. You know, there are capable people there, but they probably don't have the decision-making authority to really call these, you know, these transfers. I mean, if you look at Froome and Fuglsang, I would say that's probably, you know, combined 6 to 6.5 million, between 6 and 7 million. I mean, that's like half the budget of some of the cycling teams, and they have done nothing.
Mm. Well, so, I mean, Mike Woods. Pretty good. Not as good as he was before he went to Israel. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're getting people on the downslope. This is the problem. They're getting everyone on the downslope of their career. Probably because you never really want the person running the team who's writing the checks. You want some sort of, like, you want to hire someone whose job it is to run the team and evaluate talent, as opposed to just, I like Chris Froome. I like Mike Woods. This is going to be awesome. Let's hire him. Yeah, it's just, I think maybe Adams is too close to the situation.
I think so too. I think you know, for now we can say that team is like, it's like one of those, how do you say that, one of those places where all champion horses go retire and have a good life on prairie, you know, like on the fields.
It's like the Villages in Florida.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's like a Kentucky stud farm or something.
It's old horses heaven.
Mm. And, you know, on the opposite, you know, it's been the theme of this show for the last year at least is young talent, finding young talent, grabbing young talent. They're performing really well. Mm-hmm. In fact, we have a couple of riders that we want to talk about today that, and I'm just selfishly being an American, excited to talk about Mateo Jorgensen.
Yeah.
Grabbing second overall. And very close to winning a very big stage race. So
yeah, and confirming really that he is getting to the level that, you know, he's going to be. I mean, he's maybe already one of the top 10 best riders in the world right now. You know what I mean?
Wow! And he just turned 20. What, a month or two ago? Correct?
No. Jorgensen.
Oh, sorry. Oh, I'm thinking. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, Jorgensen is older than that, but he's still in the running for the young for the young competition, which is
he's 23.
Okay, my bad.
Yeah,
it's still, you know, I mean,
very young.
He is, and you can really see the progress. You know, you can follow that progress step by step. He was at the level to win this. He, you know, came across Adam Yates, who was just a bit better. Did an amazing time, Carl Jorgensen, and also amazing climbing. That, you know, that was a hard climb, 21 kilometer uphill. So I think it's the confirmation that this rider is you know, the real deal. I haven't seen it confirmed, but I think it's confirmed that he's actually going to leave Movistar and reportedly has signed for Jumbo-Visma. If that's the case, I think that next year we're going to see a Mathieu Jorgensen who still steps it up another level. You know, we all see what happened to, for example, Christophe Laporte. You know, really, I mean, you cannot have two teams that are more separate than Movistar, which, you know, they're obviously, I mean, listen, they've been around for more than 40 years, right? And it's still the same DNA. It's still, you know, kind of old school. They're obviously, you know, modernizing and everything. But when Jorgensen goes to Jumbo-Visma, he is going to be like a kid in a candy store and really, you know, step it up another level. I'm pretty sure.
That's an interesting thing that I want you guys to give me your thoughts on, because if he's coming into this progression and he's a good all-rounder, he's the darling at Movistar. And now he's going to, you know, arguably a better program, but a crowded space, right? Which, like, break that down. You sound like it. Your tone sounds like this is a big move for him to go to Jumbo-Visma.
I think it's a big move, but it is what he needs to do. You know, these guys, obviously, all these riders talk to each other. They all have friends and different teams. You know, he's probably friends with Sepp Kuss. You know, so I don't know if Jorgensen lives in Girona also or in Andorra, probably in Andorra. By the way, I think Jorgensen's family, they are either listeners of The Move or followers of my social media, because I got a really nice message from his mom a few weeks ago, saying that Mathieu Jorgensen and his brother, when they were 8 and 10 years old, apparently the family lived in Madrid for a year or a couple of years. And they were both, when they were 8 and 10, they were training at the same club where my son is actually training right now, the same cycling club. Mm-hmm. So thank you, Miss Jorgensen, for the note and the listening. But yeah, I mean, I think if he goes to Jumbo-Visma, we're going to see a better Mathieu Jorgensen. No disrespect to Movistar, but, you know, the facts are there.
Well, JB, I mean, I too was a little concerned. I was like, well, where's he going to fit in? But if we just look, you know, expanding off our Israel, what are they doing question? Like, if you look at the stage winners of Romandy, there was one guy who won a stage here that was over the age of 29, and it's 30-year-old Adam Yates. I mean, it's pretty clear at this point, the future of the sport is younger riders. So we might perceive it to be crowded, but Roglic is not getting younger. Dylan Van Baarle's not getting younger. I mean, they're probably just looking for younger talent to come in and kind of replace people that we might consider still to be stars, but they're looking at the landscape and saying, well, I think we maybe need to get younger stars in here before these guys start to age out and go to Israel and don't do anything for the rest of their career.
And then you maybe also need two good all-rounders, right? In case of injury. Like, we've talked about Bernal, which we're going to talk more about him today. But, you know, if you have all your eggs in one basket with one Grand Tour rider, right? That's risky.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I think in the case of Jorgensen, for example, if he goes to Jumbo-Visma, he will be able to focus on one-week stage races. And he can win, I mean, I'm not going to say a lot, but he can win a few of them. You know, he can win Paris-Nice, he can win Tirreno, he can win this race, Romandy, Tour of Switzerland. You know, this is one of the big seven, right, as we call them, which are the seven big one-week stage races next to the three Grand Tours. You know, if you can time trial and you can climb like he does, and he's in a great team, that's, you know, that's the ticket. He can win those races.
And when Roglic is not racing, that is a weak spot for the team. They do not have great 1 week stage race. I mean, Wout Van Aert could probably win any 1 week stage race he wanted, but he just doesn't chase the GC in those. So they need someone to come in and, you know, plug in GC at races where they don't have Roglic and peak Vindegaard.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
So Jorgensen had a great time trial, and that brings up another American name that I had not ever heard mentioned on this show before, Will Barta. Mm-hmm. Where did he come from?
Well, Will's claim to also fame
on
is...
Also on Movistar, by the way.
Also on Movistar. I was joking in the pre-show. Movistar is the new best American team in the sport. I believe they have the same, if not more, American number of American riders as EF, like the great American team, and also maybe the same or more than Trek as well, which is registered in the US. But Barta, his standout ride was getting second in, I believe it was the 2020 Vuelta a España. It was an excruciating second place. I'm looking it up now just to make sure I got it right. Yeah,
he lost it in
13 time trial. Roglic beats him by a second. He was in the hot seat all day and then loses the stage at the very last second. Brutal way to lose it. Similar thing here where he was in the hot seat. He had put down a great early ride, looked like maybe he could win the stage. And then his teammate and countryman Jorgensen smashed his time. And I'm thinking, wow, Mateo is going to win this time trial. And then no, Juan Ayuso, 20 years old, coming into his first race of the year. Yeah. I always thought time trials are something that you know, that's the last thing to click into gear when you're getting fitness. Apparently not with him. It's just like, whatever, I'm coming off the couch, I'm going to crush this time trial and win it. So, you know, but Barta getting fit there was really good.
I think Juan Ayuso, that performance, it says a lot about his quality as a cyclist. You know, I mean, first of all, if you look at him, the guy, I mean, first, he looks a lot older than 20. When he speaks, his interviews are incredible. I mean, first, also for a Spanish guy, he lived for 2 years in the United States. His English is impeccable, like perfect. Perfect English. But the way he talks, the way he looks forward, the way he sees himself and his position in the sport, this is like an established guy already, you know? And the day before he was second in the bunch sprint, only beaten by Ethan Hayter. And to win that time trial, that was a surprise. And to me, it was a surprise, but to him probably also, I think he kind of let understand there that he was not going to be able to maintain the lead, you know, because he had doubts about his form. But man, if you win that time trial, you have to be damn good. That's pure talent.
Who's winning a World Tour time trial not on peak form? I mean, it's unbelievable.
After 7 months of no racing and only having been given the clear 1 month before to train full because he has this strange injury, which apparently is still not fixed. There's still, you know, it's a nerve inflammation at his heel or his Achilles tendon or something. So, I mean, to do that, that's like, okay, this is like a super talent. I mean, you know, 19 years old, third in the Vuelta.
Yeah. Yeah. The UAE must really believe in him. They have him signed through 2028. That's a lot of security and a lot of anticipation that he's going to perform.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Tell me, throw some cold water on me here if I'm out of control, but with the sprint on stage two, time trial stage three, and his third place in the Vuelta last year, is this not reminding you of Tadej Pogacar?
Of course.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it is like, what if they have Pogacar and then they have the second Pogacar as well? Mm-hmm. Like, it's not out of the realm of possibility they've snagged the two most talented riders in the sport, at least from a GC perspective.
The guy's a racer and a champion since forever I can remember. He was, you know, he was Spanish champion in all the categories. Then I think was the year, not last year, the year before he won the baby Giro, Giro under 23 in an unbelievable dominating fashion. You can see that guy is just something else, you know, and here he proves it again. I was really surprised to see I thought, you know, he's going to go to Romandy, you know, try to finish the race, see if the injury is okay. No, no, he was racing from day one. And it already in the prologue, he went full gas, you know. And I mean, to do that, I mean, how can you even train for an effort like the time trial, you know, without any racing? 7 months of no racing, and then you train and you win.
Yeah, it's possible he wasn't even training that much on his time trial bike. Just, this feels good. I'll just see how fast I can go. Oh, yeah. I won the time trial. should we talk about after stage three? I maybe was overly excited. I was thinking, wow, he's going to win the GC. Mm-hmm. Like if he can win the time trial, he can hang on this steady climb. And then I'm start thinking, poor Adam Yates, he leaves Ineos. Why exactly did he leave, Johan? Did he leave because he felt like he wasn't going to get opportunities there, or he just got a better offer from UAE?
Well, I think the money's going to have been a factor. But then again, you know, Ineos is also, they are the biggest budget in pro cycling.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? So I don't know how much they paid him. I mean, he was a good rider when he was on the Australian team. I don't remember what it was called when he left. Was it Bike Exchange when he left?
I think it was Bike Exchange. Yeah.
But so he's gone for you know, a really good salary to Ineos. And I don't know. I mean, I don't know if Ineos didn't have the confidence in him anymore, because he knows that if he goes to the UAE, that, you know, there's one guy when the biggest race in the world is going on, that's the guy, you know, and it's not him. So, I don't know, man. He's racing well on that team, I have to say.
Yeah, it worked out. I mean, Ayuso gets dropped. There was pretty hard pace. Oddly, Jayco seemed to be the one taking it up. They jostled Ayuso loose. It worked out perfectly for Adam Yates and kind of set him up. And I mean, that's what Adam Yates does. He has some deficiencies as a GC rider, but, you know, stringing it out and then winning a long, steady climb is not one of those deficiencies.
Like, especially those kind of stages with like one hard climb at the finish. He is, I'm not going to say the best, but in the three best of the in the world. I mean, he dropped Remco in UAE, Tour of UAE.
Yep.
You know, I think it's the only guy who was able to drop Remco in a 1-to-1 until now. So, and I think within UAE, I think they knew that their real card to play was going to be Adam Yates. You know, he had done this amazing time trial the day before, which, you know, shows how good he was. And then once he went, there was really nobody who could follow him. Jurgensen did the right thing. You know, he did what he had to do. He kept his tempo, you know, like Indurain style, you know, just keeping the tempo, but his pace was not strong enough to, you know, to get closer to Adam Yates. And I think the best rider won the race.
I mean, also Adam Yates, great ride. Egan Bernal finished 54 seconds back on Yates. So this is the best we've seen from Bernal all year. Great ride. But also I was thinking, man, would be nice if Ineos had Adam Yates. Like when this kind of seems like a race they should be winning and the rider they let walk is now winning it. So that was kind of odd to me, but what did you guys take from Bernal's? Obviously that's a good ride from him. What were your thoughts on that? Are you guys excited about it, or do you think he just still has a long ways to go?
He does have a long way to go still, but it goes in the right direction. You know, it's the first. Let's not forget. So he had this huge accident last year at the beginning of the year. Could come back racing a little bit at the end of the year. Started in Argentina, did pretty well in the uphill finish, and then had a crash, abandoned. Then he came back for Tour of Catalunya after his problems with his knee. He was racing there for teammates, not actually trying to race for himself. Again, had a crash. Then did the Tour of the Basque Country, and there he was full on helper. And this is the first time that we saw him race for himself. Although what we've also seen in two occasions was him leading out the bunch for Ethan Hayter in two occasions. He was the second last rider to pull the sprint. But I like what I see. You know, is it going to be good enough to be back at the level that of the best Bernal? That's a question mark. And is that level of the best Bernal going to be good enough to be rivaling with Pogacar and Vingegaard? That's another question, right? But I was glad to see that he was fighting there and trying his best and pushing it and suffering. And you know, that's good to see.
I don't want to be too negative, but just one thing I was thinking about during this race is, what if Egan Bernal returns? You know, I think we have a hard time with this. It's either you're going to be Chris Froome, you're never going to come back, you're never going to do anything, or you're going to return to your best level or better than that. The more probable thing is it's somewhere in the middle. Like, what if he's just Roman Bardet for the rest of his career? You know, finishes top 10, maybe top 5 in 1 week stage races, can get maybe a stage win in a Grand Tour, just a really strong rider all around. Now, that would be my prediction. And then are we happy with that? Like the media in general?
If I'm Egan Bernal, but first of all, Egan Bernal has gone on record several times to say, hey, you know, I've already won the most important race in my life, and that's I'm still alive and I'm still a bike rider. You know, that's another way of looking at it, right? And then secondly, if I'm Egan Bernal, I would, you know, try to get to my best possible level and try to win the Vuelta. Then he has won the 3 Grand Tours. I mean, there's not that many riders in the world who can say, hey, you know, I won all 3 of the Grand Tours. And that's, in my opinion, an achievable goal.
Yeah, I think this reminds me of something you've said a lot as of late, Johan, is like, even if he gets back to his best, his Tour de France win form, the whole peloton is increasing by 1 or 2% every year. Yeah. It's not enough.
Exactly. And that's my fear. But, you know, I mean, listen, what else can he do? He can, you know, I think the most important is that he's healthy, he's competitive again, or getting competitive again, and that he enjoys riding his bike. And you know, we all know he's a huge talent. Unfortunately, you know, things happen in the careers of people. And if that's, you know, what basically limits his future now, so be it. You know, I mean, he's, you know, he seems happy on the bike, so I'm happy for him. I'm a big Bernal fan, always been, and you know, I applaud him to try to come back to his best possible level.
The only problem is winning the Vuelta is becoming as hard as winning the Tour. I mean, those are good riders. I mean, another Giro win would, if I had to guess, if you said he wins another Grand Tour, guess what it is? That would probably be my best guess, that, you know, maybe he could come back to a level where he wins a Giro.
Yeah, well, I mean, or if Pogacar and Vingegaard don't participate in the Vuelta, then, you know, he's one of the potential winners also.
Or Ayuso or Remco Evenepoel. You'd have to, the problem is there's so many talented GC guys.
I think
right
Remco
now.
He won the Vuelta. He's going to the Giro now, his main goal. Next step is going to be the Tour. Egan Bernal tried to win the Vuelta as soon as possible. Before another young guy comes across.
Well, do we want to talk about two of those guys?
Yeah, let's talk about two young talents that really stood out this week. Let's start with Max Poole.
Yeah, I mean, you know, already, I mean, Max Poole, born in 2003, just turned 20. I got the hint from his agent to check him out and look, you know, we did mention him in the Up and Comers show, but I only mentioned him because I got that information from the guy who's representing him. But man, what he showed this guy, fourth in a World Tour stage race at that young age, that's, and especially how he rode also, you know, he rode on that climb. He was actually riding at the service of Romain Bardet. And then Bardet blew up and he stayed there and he finished in front of on that stage and finished his fourth. So he must have done a really good time trial too. Big talent. Again, we spoke about it in the pre-show, Spencer, you know, again, a huge British talent who's not on Ineos.
Yeah. Huge strange. Whiff. It's very strange. And then we'll let you say the name of this next.
No, Spencer, you say it. Give it a shot. Give it a go.
It's Sine Udenbrooks. Is that right, Johan?
It's Kian Uytebrooks.
Oh, Kian, I never in a million years would have guessed that.
Yeah, that's he's on the internet somewhere, and he says his name twice or three times for the journalist so everybody can hear. Kian Uytebrooks. Known as the in Belgium since a few years already, since he was a junior. I mean, he was a junior last year, I guess. 2 years ago. But was on the same team as when Remco was a junior his last year. And, you know, the rumors were then there's this guy, you know, Kian Uytebrooks. He has better numbers than Remco Evenepoel. Hard to believe, but he must be quite close because, you know, the guy is a huge talent. He won the Tour de l'Avenir last year, really dominantly, by far the best rider in the race. And, now he's slowly building up. You know, he was top 10 in Catalonia, his first World Tour race, World Tour stage race. I think he was ninth. Now is sixth in Tour of Romandy. I mean, those are two results that kind of say, hey, you know, these are not anymore Mickey Mouse races. You know, this is high level. And it's a guy, I've been following him quite a bit. You know, he is unbelievably professional, focuses and has an amazing work ethic for all the details. And real climber, and he still needs to work on his time trialing, but he's getting the results that he's going for. So I've heard now that he would like to do the Vuelta at the end of the season. So that would be obviously also interesting for us Belgians to see him in the Tour of Spain.
What was the youngest rider you ever took to a Grand Tour as director, Johan?
You know what? I mean, I think it was probably Christian van der Velde in 99. I think he was 21, about to turn 22. And I took Christian to the Vuelta, to the Tour, because we didn't have nine capable riders to go to the Tour. on the postal team in 99.
He got called up.
And I do remember that I called Christian's dad, John. And I said, hey, you know, your son is doing good, but he's young. Are you okay if I take him to the Tour?
Wow.
So I kind of asked his permission. That was how it was seen back then, you know, 25 years ago almost. It was kind of super, super young, and you would not normally do that.
It could ruin a rider. Like, it's just too much too soon. Or
that was the belief then.
Yeah.
That was the belief then, you know. Wow. Turns out we were all wrong.
Well, it's funny you say, because you said go to the Vuelta, and I'm thinking, oh, he's too young. But if you really think about it, I think a strong 20-year-old, I think it's fine. You know, I think the mental part would be the biggest fear if you said you have to win this race or you're a failure, and then he doesn't win the race and he can't get over that. But physically, I mean, these 20-year-olds are so strong. I think it's probably fine for them to race the Grand Tour.
I would definitely take him. In today's cycling, and on top of that, he wants to go. He's eager to learn and feels motivated and is confident that he can do a good performance. I say go.
I know one other rider we wanted to talk about today, because I'm remembering back when we started the Move podcast, it felt like, you know, every other day we were talking about Fernando Gaviria, and then we weren't for quite a while. And then he looked great. And I also love your thoughts on those sprints that have, you know, a hard turn near the finish, and he hit it first and finished it off. Like, but that was impressive.
Spencer, you want to comment on,
yeah,
on
that? I was going to, JB, this was like Texas style crit racing. First man to go wins. Just get into that final turn first. I mean, it would seem crazy because the 300 meter banner was right before that turn. So you'd think, well, that's way too far. But he went right before it. And then you probably have, what, 2-3 seconds where you're coasting through the turn. So you're buying yourself some time there. You open back up and, you know, maybe it's only a 10 second effort after the turn. So it was actually, I thought, a really, really savvy thing for him to do. I thought, wow, he's still winning races at this age. It's so impressive. I looked it up. He's 28 years old. So not as old as I thought he was, but it was nice to see Gaviria come back and not only the win, but just, I mean, it was dominant. And as soon as he opened up that sprint, no one was even close. And you know, there probably wasn't, the race was so hard. There wasn't anyone on the level and just the power, the raw power that he's able to put out. But, you know, beating Nicholas Arndt, who's a strong, strong rider, Ethan Hayter, who's becoming a really good, difficult day sprinter. I mean, those are serious riders that he beat.
Yeah. Yeah. For him to be there, you know, because the likes of Viviani and Cavendish abandoned, I think, on day one or day two. But yeah, I mean, Gaviria, it's good to see him winning again, you know. I would love to see him back to, you know, his, I mean, when he was on Quickstep, man, he was unbelievable. I said, that guy, I think he won one year. I don't know if he won 3 stages in the tour.
I think so. I think that was one of the first years of the move.
Yeah. Yeah. That's when Lance couldn't pronounce his name yet.
Yes. I recall.
I think it was Gaviria at that time. Gaviria.
And he did get, we should say he got dropped during the stage, like 78 K to go. He gets dropped. Yeah. And you know, the thing we've seen from him, maybe in the last 2 or 3 years, he'll just, you can like tell that he's defeated, you know, he'll get dropped and he's just, the life comes out of the pedal stroke, but he didn't panic. He just kept chugging. And then he caught on, I think it was like 38 K to go. So that's almost 50 kilometers of chasing. And that's hard. That takes a lot of work. And then to catch on, get to the front, win the stage. I mean, he must be in really, really top shape right now.
Yeah, no, he must, I mean, it must be great for him to win again, you know, on the World Tour level. He had one win in Argentina at the beginning of the year. So, you know, I think, listen, I mean, Gaviria, great win, but also great race for Team Movistar, man. I mean, they had a few guys who are, I mean, I don't know if this is the team that, except Jurgensen, if this is the team that they're going to take to the Giro, but they were definitely super motivated for this race and on a very high level, the whole team as a whole. They did a really nice race.
I know when we talked recently, Tour of Alps, you were guys, that's a good tune-up for the Giro. This is also like the last tune-up. Were there any takeaways of someone who, like, we Giro, we keep talking about the two-man race, but did you see anything that indicates a potential podium finisher?
In my opinion, Caruso. Damiano Caruso, you know, he was second 2 years ago when Bernal won. And obviously he's back in good shape, so he's gonna be a podium candidate also. Other than that, there was not really anybody else going for GC that will be riding the Giro. You know, now kind of the feeling is Tour of the Alps is good, Tour of Romandie is already a little bit too close to the Giro to go full gas and then, you know, be able to maintain that for another 4 weeks, that form, you know. Mm-hmm. So yeah, but I mean, seeing Caruso in the top three, no, he's gonna, not gonna say, I mean, I think when he was second in the Giro, that was his top level. We've never seen him race so aggressively on that good, but yeah, he's going to be one of the candidates for the podium.
Yeah, he's lurking. I mean, it was strong. The stage to Tyon 2000. I love the names of these Swiss ski resorts. I mean, to get third on that stage, he's in really good shape. It does seem too close to the Giro, but just one thing I want to point out is it's not the Tour. It does not start full gas. And do you even remember a few years ago, the Yates brothers were complaining, like Simon Yates specifically, that he was getting out of shape in the first week of the Giro, and then he'd be out of shape by the time the mountains came. Assuming that that's true, maybe it is good to race up to the weekend before the Giro starts.
Yeah, well, I don't know about he was getting out of shape.
Doing workouts in the trainer when he got back to the hotel. I mean, I thought it was maybe a little kooky, but we'll have to look into this more.
Yeah, yeah. Well, speaking of the Giro, you know, one thing I would like to mention, I mean, just my personal opinion, you know, I've seen some pictures of Remco Evenepoel, you know, one of the two big favorites for the Giro together with Primoz Roglic, training in Spain. And I kind of start to think that nowadays, these guys, these top guys, when they train, their training rides are harder than a lot of races. The pain I saw on his face while doing, you know, workouts, I have not seen Remco Evenepoel with that suffering face in any race, not even in Liège-Bastogne-Liège when he was, you know, on a 30-kilometer solo. I had not seen that pain on his face. So the guy is still pushing to improve that 1 or 2% that he says he needs. And I'm curious to see how he's going to show up. I mean, people are going to say, because I don't know if it's on this podcast or on La Movida. I think it's on La Movida. I'm getting criticized to be a Remco fanboy. And I am a Remco fanboy. But, you know, just wanted to mention that the guy's pushing it to the limit to be as good as he can be at the start of the Giro.
That's interesting. I know you talk a lot about how the methods have changed, but in your era, you did kind of the opposite, more training below threshold.
Yeah.
And do you think that's gone out the window, that philosophy?
Completely.
Interesting.
Completely. Now it's all, I mean, it's not all, I mean, they still put in the hours and the distance, you have to. But the intensity on some of those training rides, there's not many races that get to that level. Look at Ayuso. He shows up and he wins the time trial. He hasn't raced for 7 months. So he must, I mean, there's nobody who can tell me that he didn't do those intensities. It's you know, you can't just show up and say, okay, you know, I'm going to go, you know, faster than I went in training and win the time trial. He must have done those kind of efforts at some point.
Yeah, it kind of validates the all the crossover we have with cyclocross too. That, I mean, full gas for an hour, right?
Yeah.
It's translated. Anything else you guys wanted headed to touch on before we wrap up this tour of Romandy?
That's about it for me.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm good.
Spencer, you always have something in your hip pocket. So
I don't know. I think I'm out. I think I emptied the clip this time. One, maybe someone we didn't mention is Thomas Gloag. Is that how you say his last name?
Gloag.
Really good ride for Jumbo Visma. I mean, and he kind of animated the final stage today by getting in that break. He was only 2 and odd minutes down on the GC, so just kept the leash tight all day. I was pretty impressed by him.
Yeah, good rider. But if you look at the performance as a collective performance of Jumbo Visma, I think they should be disappointed with the end result, you know, because they did take control of the race in several occasions, and finally they couldn't get a top result. So I think they're disappointed.
I think that ties into the Matteo Jorgensen acquisition. I mean, this has been. This does happen to them at these races where they'll look like, do you remember Sepp Kuss would come in in 2021 to all these 1 week stage races as their leader, and then they were uncompetitive. Mm-hmm. And it's this is kind of a recurring thing for them.
You can't win everywhere, man. It's
Did they get a new sponsor, Johan? Or what happened with Jumbo? They're confident.
It's not confirmed yet that Jumbo is gonna. I think they still have a deal for next year, right?
Yeah.
If I'm not mistaken. And so there's a lot of changes going on within the company. So rumors are that they would either, you know, pull out or step back a little bit. And I've read somewhere this week that if that's the case, that Visma would become the title sponsor. So, and if not, they're fine. Another, I mean, that's the team. That's the hip team right now. So, you know, everybody wants to sponsor that team.
Yeah.
See, I told you you had something in your hip pocket, Spencer. Told you.
Thanks for pushing me.
You know, we're all going to be back in just less than a week. And I don't know what the lineup of this show is going to be for our Giro preview. George and I are going to be in Chattanooga. We'll see how that shakes out. Lance is doing something you could never guess in a million years. I'll just say that. he's out of pocket for the moment, and he's doing something that we cannot tell you about at the moment, but he won't be on our Giro preview. So once we get the lay of the land out there in Chattanooga, hopefully I can join you guys for that Giro preview. And also I want to mention too, if you're a fan of this show and you're of means and can contribute, we're doing another Bikes for Kids in an area called Teleco Plains. That's in Tennessee. I'm actually, after the Fondo in Chattanooga, I'm going to run up there with some Operation Get Out people and see that community. Very impoverished. The kids, you know, most of them live below poverty, non-traditional family setup. Obesity is a problem, probably because the low income, they're probably living off fast food, right? Because it's cheap. And so we're going to come in like we did in Uvalde and give all these kids a bike and get them outside and support them. So if you can donate, $250 takes care of a kid entirely with a bike and a helmet. So if you can donate, please go to wedo.team. You will see on the top menu bar to donate to Bikes for Kids, Teleco Plains. We'd appreciate that. Johan Spencer, thank you as always. And we'll talk soon.
Thanks.
See you soon. Thanks, JB. We'll be right back.